From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
I tell you, Mr. Bush, that God sent down here to earth Jesus the Christ. And Jesus the Christ said, blessed are, he didn't say, blessed are the warmongers. He didn't say, blessed are the oil companies. He didn't say, blessed are corporate raiders like Enron and Worldcon. He didn't say, blessed are those who want to spend $20 million in war while we don't have health care and all kinds of different types of living conditions for our own people. He didn't say that. He didn't say that blessed are those who have a criminal justice system where the rich get bail and sale and the poor and black get jail and hell. No, he didn't say that. He said, blessed are the peacemakers.
Prayers for peace. Today in this holiday special, religious leaders speak out against war. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. Happy holidays. I'm Amy Goodman. On International Human Rights Day, more than 120 protests and events were held around the country. These protests have been held throughout this holiday month. On that day, in an event sponsored by religious leaders in New York outside the United Nations, about 100 people were arrested. Just before that protest, religious leaders gathered at Riverside Church to denounce war. On International Human Rights Day, former President Jimmy Carter, accepting the Nobel Peace Prize, warned against preventive war, cautioning it could have catastrophic consequences. The National Council of Churches has called for a season of peacemaking. A large demonstration is planned in Washington for the holiday of Martin Luther King's birthday. The council recently sponsored a full-page ad in the New York Times addressing directly President Bush, saying, "Your war would violate the teachings of Jesus Christ. It would violate the tenets, prayers, and entreaties of your own United Methodist Church bishops." In fact, the Council of Bishops of the United Methodist Church, Bush's church, have called on him not to go to war. Today, we're going to spend the hour at the Riverside Church, where bishops from many different religious leaders from different denominations gathered to speak out against war. We begin with the Dr. James Fitzgerald, Reverend Minister for Social Justice at the historic Riverside Church.
Today, religious communities across the country have been asked to have prayers for peace. This interfaith service of prayers for peace is Riverside's response. We are here tonight for what has become a historic moment for the Riverside Church. In 1967, exactly 1 year before he was assassinated, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. stood right here, this very spot, and declared in a famous speech the linkage between the civil rights movement and the anti-war movement of the day. He stood virtually alone among civil rights leaders. 35 years later, those attending the NAACP Religious Leaders Summit last month declared their opposition to the proposed war in Iraq, establishing linkage now between the civil rights movement and the anti-war movement. Excerpts are on the back of your bulletin. So we are here tonight in unity. Over 100 denominational and religious leaders of the African American community have joined the leadership of virtually all the Protestant mainline denominations, the Roman Catholic Conference of American Bishops, and the National Council of Churches to oppose the proposed war in Iraq. Brothers and sisters, what we are about tonight is not extreme, it is mainstream. This is a war that poll after poll shows that many people have significant reservations about and very few people really want. But in the media, we see almost no reporting of events and persons opposing the war. So we call on the media to be fair and balanced in their reporting of the religious mainstream of this country and of the many anti-war activities that are occurring in this country and around the world. You will hear momentarily about religious leaders going on a prayer pilgrimage for peace to the U.S. State Department, the United Nations, and finally to Baghdad. Born in the urgency of the moment, This is an interracial, ecumenical, and interfaith pilgrimage that involves many of the religious leaders you see before you. This is working ecumenism, working interfaith.
The Reverend Herbert Daughtry, House of the Lord Pentecostal Church.
In a prayer pilgrimage for peace. We want to make it abundantly clear that we condemn the violation of human rights wherever it exists. We call the world to remember the tradition of peace and human rights advocacy and activism in the USA and the history of the Fertile Crescent, particularly in the region we now call Iraq, where in that general region, with the birth of Abraham, three of the world's great religions were born: Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And the foundation was laid for significant contributions to civilization. We appeal to world leaders in the name of God, in the name of humanity, in the name of all that's decent and right, to turn away from war. Let us direct our resources and our technology to peace, healing, human rights, and the eradication of poverty and all of its hideous manifestations. It may be that it is the only answer to war and terrorism. Humbly, we appeal to our brothers and sisters of faith to join us in this prayer pilgrimage for peace. We urge them to pray and fast with us as we conduct worship and vigils wherever they are, and to use their influence with world leaders to desist from war, rhetoric, and preparation.
Let us be, insofar as we are able, pure in heart as we go about this work.
Peter Lorman of the Judson Memorial Church.
People like me who find it so easy to hold this administration in utter contempt. But if that contempt shows in the work that we do, we won't be successful, because that's what people will see. We need to lead from our love. We need to lead from our hope. We need to lead from the joy that is one united humanity.
Imam Mahdi Bray, Muslim American Society Freedom Foundation.
Our goal should not be to eliminate weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Our goal should be to eliminate weapons of mass destruction for the face of the earth. We must demystify terrorism by decontextualizing its symbiotic relationship through the empirical analysis. Now, to break that on down, as we say in the hood, us black folks have realized that terrorism did not begin on September the 11th. We've known terrorism in this country all of our lives. Oh, terrorism is a terrible thing. But I tell you, the greatest terror is an unloving heart. Therefore, I want to speak to my dear President, Mr. Bush, and say that, oh, yes, you have some awesome power. Oh, yes, you are the superpower. Your arm spreads all over the world. But I tell you, President Bush, your arms are too short to box with God. I tell you, Mr. Bush, that God sent down here to earth Jesus the Christ. And Jesus the Christ said, blessed are, he didn't say, blessed are the warmongers. He didn't say, blessed are the oil companies. He didn't say, blessed are corporate raiders like Enron and Worldcon. He didn't say, blessed are those who want to spend $20 million in war while we don't have health care and all kinds of different types of living conditions for our own people. He didn't say that. He didn't say that blessed are those who have a criminal justice system where the rich get bail and sell and the poor and black get jail and hell. No, he didn't say that. He said, blessed are the peacemakers.
The Reverend Earl Cooper Camp, St. Mary's Episcopal Church.
About this and reflecting on this, I've been angry. I've been really angry. And I'm angry because I've got a lot of things to do in my life. Million Americans, 20 days from now, December 28th, will lose their unemployment insurance. We've got to do something about that. The schools in this neighborhood are failing our kids. We have not been able to do anything about that, to do the sort of thing to challenge the young minds, to educate the future generations. I've been angry because this fear-mongering and this electioneering of that son of a Bush down in D.C., it's making me so angry, I don't know what to do. Here in a time when we should have peace, a time of resistance, when our Jewish brothers and sisters have just remembered that great festival of Hanukkah, where they opposed the oppressors. This time when our Muslim brothers and sisters have fasted holy for 40 days, now begin a new year of Ramadan, a time when we as Christians come together in Advent to await the coming of peace, and yet there's nothing but talk of war, and it makes me mad. Anger is not a sin. Anger is a sign that something is wrong. And indeed, something is wrong when in this 21st century, we have to stand here to oppose wars. And yet, that's what we do.
The Reverend John Mendez, National Progressive Baptist Convention.
America has been suffering and in pain from narcissistic wounds experienced within the Vietnam War. And during that period, there were many who were trying to figure out how to become macho again. So when there was no war, we produced Rambo. After Rambo, many other duplicate types of movies. Then Ronald Reagan came along, and we found ourselves picking on tiny countries like Grenada, Panama, and now we've moved it on up to Iraq. And we're like a giant bully picking on and kicking them around and then talking about how great we are. I tell you, we're suffering from narcissistic wounds. But there's another aspect to this, and that is we are still an imperialistic nation. As the resources, the natural resources of oil and gas begin to dry up over the world, we will see more competition for the resources that are left. And we who claim to be the strongest and understand that the Bush family and Cheney represent Oil Incorporated. And so much of this foreign policy is represented by oil interests, including Enron Corporation. And so many of our young poor teenagers and young people are being asked to go and fight a war when they come back home, hardly have enough money to put oil in their cars. So this is an opportunity for us as the religious community to redefine really what religion is all about. For too long, this nation has redefined religion in terms of its capitalistic spirit of prosperity, wealth and health, and more importantly, taken a turn to the right and have gotten on some of the most backwards, retrograde, retroactive positions that have taken this country backward rather than forward. This is an opportunity. This is an opportunity for us to redefine religion, a religion that in fact incorporates the material as well as the spiritual, a religion that incorporates the prophetic as well as the spiritual, a religion that incorporates taking a stand against the war in favor of peace, putting love over hate, justice over injustice, and truth over the lie. This is an opportunity for us. To put inclusion over division. It is the vision of the prophets, the vision of Dr. King, the vision of this church, and the vision of this broad coalition.
The Reverend Al Sharpton of National Action Network.
For this delegation to embark on a journey for peace, it seems to me that it is a sign of the time that even for clergy to talk about peace is somehow questioned as being controversial. There was a time you would assume that those that claim to speak on behalf of the Supreme Being would also be expected to try and spare the shedding of blood of his creatures. The fact that we have been given an overdose of preachers that anoint missiles rather than children and that sanctify wicked foreign policy rather than prophesy to the times in which they live, means that this gathering tonight will be questioned as to why it happened, rather than why it has not happened before and more often. April 4th, 1967, Martin Luther King Jr. stood here in this historic pulpit and said why he had to oppose the war in Vietnam. What is strange to me is that we are over three decades later, and every church and synagogue and cathedral and places of worship you can find hangs Dr. King's picture up, but dismisses Dr. King's message. What is the point to hang up a portrait of Dr. King when you destroy the message that Dr. King brought? Will it not be the height of hypocrisy when all of these churches gather for King Day celebrations in 30 days from now? Yet they will be shipping off Dr. King's grandchildren to war. And many of them will be celebrating King Day on the front lines of Baghdad rather than dealing with the issues of peace and social justice that Dr. King gave his life for. When you look at what is going on today in America, record unemployment, the economy is so bad that even the Secretary of Treasury had to resign. AIDS rising as an epidemic. Health care so expensive that people are choosing 1 month to pay their rent, another month for prescription drugs. Housing that is called affordable, not affordable to people, but only affordable to those that want to rent them or sell them at exorbitant prices. When you look at the social conditions that is engaged in by this present administration, one has to publicly and loudly question, are we pursuing weapons of mass destruction? Are we engaged in weapons of mass distraction? Maybe Mr. Bush meant distraction. But why would you say that, Reverend Sharpton? Well, we were attacked September 11th. World Trade Center, Pentagon attack. All of us died. Nobody told blacks to get out the building. Nobody told whites, don't come today. No one two-wayed Asians and told them don't show up. Everybody died together. We were told that bin Laden was responsible. But all of a sudden, we're not after bin Laden. We're after Hussein. And why are we after Hussein? Because he might have weapons of mass destruction. Now, I grew up in the ghetto, and sometimes we had the misfortune of having our houses broken in. It doesn't make sense to me if somebody breaks in my house that my reaction is to go after somebody across the street that threatened my father 20 years ago. It would seem to me the intelligent reaction, even if it is not moral, but at least more understandable, is that you would concentrate on who you know has weapons and who you know attacks you, rather than risk lives on who may have weapons and who has not attacked you. So are we engaged in distraction, or are we engaged in looking for weapons of mass destruction? Well, if we're looking for weapons of mass destruction, we found out in 60 days some very interesting things in the same 60-day period. Bush went to Russia and gave Putin $20 billion to defuse some of his weapons. North Korea said, we've been lying to y'all. We got weapons. Bush said, well, let's talk to them. But at the same time, he said, let's send the troops into Iraq. Even while they're trying to understand the declaration that Iraq handed over, 60,000 troops are in the area right now. So you tell somebody, we will agree with the UN. You appeal to them to abide by the UN standards. But you send in troops and say, no matter what you say, I'm not going to believe you anyhow. And if the UN doesn't do what I want to do, then rather than respect world opinion, we're going to go in anyhow. And then we turn around and ask why they don't like us. The real issue is, do we like ourselves? Because if we like ourselves, then we join Reverend in saying, whatever you do that is wicked, whatever you do that is sinful, whatever you do that is contrary to what's right, you will not do it in our name. Why such a diverse group? Why people from different religions come together? Because we all have enough sense to know that all of us are fighting for our own lives. If this strategy goes to its logical conclusion, we may be risking the very lives of our family members, our children. You cannot engage in military action and only hurt Hussein. Americans will die. Iraqi children will die. Iraqi women will die. And we cannot go through whatever religious holidays we observe, whether it be Ramadan, whether it be Thanksgiving or Christmas or Hanukkah. How can we pray to God and ignore what God has commanded we do about God's children? There is a difference in all religions of interpretation. I come out of the Christian tradition, and I can assure you, a man, there's a difference between the Christian right and the right Christians. We must rid the world of this boogeyman psychology that George Bush, in my judgment, has perpetrated on us. When I was growing up, those that did not hold know how to parent well, Reverend Forbes, would tell their kids, you better go to bed, the boogeyman's coming. Now, my mother never heard of the Office of Child Abuse, so she didn't have to tell me about no boogeyman. Because I knew to follow whatever she said. But some of my friends would be frightened in the sleep. Sometimes they weren't even tired, but they would cover their heads because the boogeyman was coming. And what George Bush has done is told America to ignore what they ought to be awakened to because the boogeyman's coming. Don't worry about prescription drugs. The boogeyman's coming. Don't worry about affordable housing. The boogeyman's coming. Don't worry about rising hunger. The boogeyman's coming. Don't worry about deficits in the states and the cities. The boogeyman's coming. We can't even keep schools up to where they ought to be in this present technology, but we can get billions of dollars to go after the boogeyman. But thank God there were some that showed the way. Philip Bergen, who died, was one who showed us what real faith was. Martin Luther King Jr., who stepped out outside of what was normal and comfortable, and was even attacked by other civil rights leaders, said, I'd rather do what is right than to do what is popular. George Bush says he must stand up for his father. Well, we come to Riverside tonight in the name of our father, Dr. Martin Luther King, to say stop this war. We call for you tonight to join us in this pursuit of peace. We have seen over the airwaves there are weapons inspectors in Baghdad. But tonight I propose that we have moral inspectors in America. We need to have inspectors that will seek balanced health care, that will seek public education, that will seek scientific solutions to HIV and AIDS, that will seek ways to house homeless people. We need to inspect ourselves on why we are building great cathedrals and allowing people to march off to war when there's work to be done to restore the dignity and pride of the American people. Mr. Bush, I went to the Senate hearings on the Patriot Bill. Yeah. I remember that Ashcroft testified that day that either you are with them or with us. Well. And they questioned the patriotism of those of us that questioned this war and questioned their new policy. But I resent anyone questioning our love for America. Love is easy when you have no call for sacrifice and no call for strength. Love is easy when you grow up wealthy, male and white in Texas. But love wasn't easy for us. We're the real lovers of America. We're the real patriots of America. We loved America from the back of the bus. We loved America when we were being lynched and jailed for no reason. We loved America when we had no right to vote. We loved America when women had no rights. We fought for America when it wouldn't fight for us. We've proven our love. We held up the flag when others held a Confederate flag in our face. Don't preach to us about America, Bush. Listen to the real Americans. Those that built the nation, those that labored in the nation, those that made the nation, those that will save the nation. We love America, and we're going to save the land of the free.
The Reverend Al Sharpton speaking at Riverside Church on December 8th with other religious leaders speaking against war. And if you'd like to get a copy of today's program, you can call 1-800-881-2359. That's 1-800-881-2359 as we continue after this break.
Come, I say come, you sitting still in domestic bacteria. Come, I say come, you standing still in double-breasted mornings. Come, I say come and return to the fight, this fight for the earth, this fight for our children, this fight for our life. We need your hurricane voices. We need your sacred hands. I say come, sister, brother, to the battlefield. Come into the rainforest. Come into the hood. Come. Come into the barrio. Come into the schools. Come into the abortion clinics. Come into the prisons. Come and caress our spines. I say, come. Wrap your feet around justice. I say, come. Wrap your tongues around truth. I say, come. Wrap your hands with deeds and prayer. You brown ones, you yellow ones, you black ones, you gay ones, you white ones, you lesbian.
You are listening to Democracy Now!, the holiday special, War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we continue with the gathering that took place earlier in this holiday month at Riverside Church, we continue with the Right Reverend Paul Moore, former Episcopal Bishop of New York.
In 1942, I was a Marine lieutenant leading a rifle platoon in the attack of the Marines on Guadalcanal. I was there for 3 months, and then I was shot through here. I had 38 kids with me, and by the time we were through, there were only 7 that were left. The other had been wounded or had been killed. And I held some of them in my arms. I saw the blood. I saw beautiful American kids killed, Japanese soldiers killed, and we'd open their tunic, and there would be a picture of them in their kimono with their children and their wife, and we had killed them like shooting rabbits. I remember that, and that really is the reason that I was so deeply strong for peace in Vietnam. The only person in the leadership of this country who has seen war is Colin Powell. And he's the one person who's trying to keep us from doing something rash. The other guys, they've never seen it. They talk about wars if it was a chessboard. Maybe we'll do this. Maybe we'll do this. They don't know that people are dying. Sometimes I think the best way we could get on the media, if we were allowed to be on the media, would be to take a baby in our arms and say, do you want to kill this baby? I don't think there's one person in the United States who would say, yes, I want to kill that baby. But if we go to Iraq, we'll be killing thousands of babies. So first of all, I'm against war, period. Okay. Now, the second thing I'd like to say is the way to deal with a fight between individuals, husbands and wives, or nations, is not to give each one of them a club to hit the other. Now, if you have a little boy who gets in a fight with a kid next door, and they're you know, hitting each other or throwing mud at each other, what do? Do you go down and give your kid a bigger club? A bigger baseball bat to hit the other kid? No. You say, hey, wait a minute, boys, what's the problem? Who hit who first, or who insulted your sister, or whatever? So what I'm trying to say is the only way we can become peaceful in this world is to get at the roots of the anger. The roots of the anger against America is that in many parts of the world, for millions of people, we are the terrorists. Yeah. It used to be that there was respect and even affection for the United States. Let's say in the early 50s, with the Peace Corps and the Marshall Plan, and they believed that we were indeed a compassionate democracy. But now in those same countries, Africa, Asia, Central America, no longer. Now it is not a nation for whom they feel affection and respect, but fear. And we will never have peace until we are a nation that is loved and respected rather than a nation that is feared. And the third thing I'd like to say, and I'm preaching to the choir here, thank God, it's a very big choir, is this, that this Iraq situation is only a symptom of something that goes much deeper into the soul of America. It's a symptom of our disease by which our leadership, not the people of the country, I know and feel, but our leadership solves problems by power and force. What do they do if a kid has a drug problem? Lock him up, throw him in prison, throw away the key. And usually he's either black or Latino. We know that. That's part of the same thing. What do they do about the so-called drug war? Do they give rehab centers all over the cities of the United States and in the rural districts? No. They bomb poppy fields in Colombia and put peasants into a starvation situation. So, you see, it's the same thing. And I believe, and this is my final thought, I believe that really, ultimately, it is the religious people of the United States, the Christians, the Jews, the Muslims, the other people of goodwill of other religions who have deep in their heart a love of God and a love of their fellow human beings anywhere in the world. And I think that most Americans, if you would sit down with them, that's the kind of people they are. And to have our nation, a nation that is feared, a nation that solves problems by bombing, is not the kind of people we are. We have to somehow, as religious leaders, so-called, rally the people of the United States to be who they are, loving, compassionate, decent people. And only then, when we root out the roots of the anger against us by outreach and compassion to the world, will we solve what's before us tonight.
Brothers and sisters, there is no way to tell in advance.
The Reverend James Forbes of Riverside Church
has finally gathered the critical mass necessary to catapult it into history's pages. But I have a feeling that you may be looking at history in the making here today. I have a feeling. This event was originally planned by the coalition of clergy gathered here because they were planning to leave from here to go to the airport to make their journey for witness of peace in Iraq and in other places along the way. But circumstances delayed their departure. Paperwork and protocol stood in the way of their departure. But we have all learned that God works in mysterious ways. Perhaps it was premature for them to leave until the Lord had gathered the likes of you and me so that their going would not be alone. And so tonight I am rejoicing that you have honored the Riverside Church. You recognize that one event that Riverside could not say no to was an event about a pilgrimage for peace. We had to say yes. No question about that. I have a feeling that we are witnessing history tonight. Let me tell you why. This aggregation is not your usual peace aggregation. These are not just the veterans of past wars. These are newcomers together. Some from the past and some from recently. And they have decided that although they represent different faith traditions, although they read from different books, pray different prayers, bow and wear different robes, that because we are people of faith, there is no question but that the God who has called us to peace and not to war. This aggregation. This is a new aggregation, a critical mass of religious leaders who will not stop until that war has been stopped. And not only that war, but until all wars are viewed as inappropriate for an age of globalization where minor skirmishes can turn into global conflagrations. As a participant in this movement, I, as a Christian minister, join with my colleagues of other religious traditions, and I ask you to heed this word. America is not basically engaged in just this war. We have been a warring people. Perhaps there were wars that were just that led to revolutions for freedom. But some wars cannot boast of justice as at their heart. And therefore, I ask my colleagues from other religious traditions, let's acknowledge that we have a spiritual crisis in America that makes it difficult for us to discern just war from just war. And so I have been praying. What America is going to need as we stop this war is spiritual revitalization, a spiritual awakening that allows us to discern the path that leads to peace in our hearts, in our communities, across lines of race and religion and class. I want you to pray with me. I have the feeling that the next religious awakening in America will not be just a Christian revival. The next religious awakening will have to be an interfaith awakening to the path that leads to peace and justice and equality. That's the next one. So tonight, they've asked me to do something. God not only works in mischievous ways, I said mysterious, but mischievous ways as well. We thought we were gathering just for this war. No, we are gathering to acknowledge that we fight not against principalities and power. We've got rulers of wickedness in high political, ecclesiastical, and social areas. So we are here for spiritual warfare. And it's going to take spiritual mobilization to keep on the path, for the obstacles are formidable. The resistance will be great. We will not have an easy stroll down the path of peace. I pray, my colleagues, whatever your religion, whatever your religion tells us, gives us the courage and the strength and the stamina to keep on when facing odds. Find it from your book. I've been looking in my book. Whatever is in your book, let's find it and get it together, because we are going to need it. We have the ability to help show what a world looks like that's fit for human habitation. America, America, don't blow it. We are the teacher of the age. What are we going to teach? What are our values? What are we standing for? What is a just economic society? What is health care about? What is education about? America, let us not be fighting. We need to somehow gather together and learn from our past how to teach this present world how we can receive the gift of life on the edge of this 21st century and lead these people to peace and justice for all. With these words said, it's time to stand. We've stood before. It's time to stand now. We've been in struggle before. We forget about the aisles. That's what's been wrong. Been too many aisles between us. We're going to join hands across the aisles, and we're going to sing, "We shall overcome, because by grace of God we shall indeed." And so the benediction: go forth in the name of the Lord to spread glad tidings abroad. The love that you share and the witness you bear will bring glory and honor to God. We shall all have peace.
We shall all have peace. We shall all have peace. We shall all have peace.
The Reverend Dr. James Forbes, Senior Minister of the Riverside Church, speaking at the Mass rally for peace on December 8th with other religious leaders. The Reverend Al Sharpton had talked about Philip Berrigan. Philip Berrigan had died two nights before this event. On the night of this event at Riverside Church, there was a wake for Philip Berrigan in Baltimore, Maryland. Daniel Berrigan, his brother, spoke at his funeral the next day. He was to have been arrested outside the United Nations on December 10th, but was with his family in Baltimore at Jonah House. Daniel Berrigan is a Jesuit priest, author, poet, and longtime peace activist. Together with his brother Philip, Dan Berrigan burned the draft files in a Catonsville, Maryland parking lot in 1968 to protest the Vietnam War. The action led to harsh prison terms for the two brothers and seven others, but it also propelled the Berrigans into the national spotlight and sparked a nationwide series of draft card burnings. Father Dan Berrigan gave the homily at his brother Philip's funeral on December 9th at the St. Peter Claver Catholic Church in Baltimore.
Dear friends, beloved family, I would like to begin with a poem. It is called "My Brother's Battered Bible Carried into Prison Repeatedly." That book, livid with thumbprints, underscorings, lashes, that book, I see you carry it into the storms, past the storms. I see you underscore like the score of music all that travail, that furious, unexplained joy. Contraband! The guards shake it out. The apostles wail. Herod screams in his stews like a souped-up record. The women wail like Cumaean sibyls. They toss it back, harmless. The bars slam shut. Now seated on the cell bunk, you play the pages slowly, slowly. A lifeline humming with the song of the jeweled fish all but taken. Philip was diagnosed and in slightly over 2 months has died. Cancer pummeled him under like the horsemen of apocalypse. The speed, the near frenzy of death were terrifying. No slowing it down, no bargaining, no give and take. And the question remains, I think, to this hour. What interventions did we hope for? Were we cheated? Were we chasing moonbeams while the horsemen plunged on, dragging Philip for quarry? Well, I think we were not cheated as we kept vigil those many days and nights. I think the Jesus of Lazarus came to us, mysterious and in disguise. I think Jesus came in the co-workers, the sister and fellow prisoners, former and current, including Jackie, Artis, and Carol. I think Jesus came in our own family, in the skilled medical people who arrived by day or night. I think Jesus arrived in the great tide of prayer that surrounded us with light, so we were enabled against odds to give Philip up, not to death, but to resurrection. I thought of patience and impatience as I thought of Philip. I thought that the two must go in uneasy tandem, that the two seem complementary, a kind of high-wire balancing act of the spirit. Philip was patient, Philip was impatient. From 1967, roughly, to the day of his death, Philip learned patience. a harsh, grating, unattractive, so-called virtue. He learned patience through bolts and bars, through stop clocks and time served. He learned it at the icy hands of judges and guards and wardens. He learned it through the war-making state and the complicit church. He learned it through long sacrifice and small return, through 35 years of American war and scarcely a week of genuine peace. So he learned from many unpromising teachers patience. It was like an iron yoke placed on his shoulders. And oh, was he ever impatient. If Philip's patience was marmoreal, and I believe it was, I thought of his impatience like a lifted hammer. The blow struck repeatedly. And what we had at the end was a masterwork of grace and human sweetness. We gazed on him with a kind of awe. Dying, Philip won the face he had earned at such cost.
Father Dan Berrigan remembering his brother, Philip Berrigan. And we'll end with Philip Berrigan's words today in this holiday special, who spent 11 of the last 30 years of his life in prison protesting war. He spoke on April 20th at the major anti-war protest in Washington. This is Philip Berrigan.
Make no mistake about this. You are the answer. We've got God and one another, and that's the way it's always has been, and that's the way it is today. So you are the answer. And please, don't get tired. Don't get tired. I love an old Buddhist proverb which says, I won't kill, but I will also prevent others from killing. And that is the rub, the latter part of that quotation. And when we try to apply it to this criminal government, it becomes a large order indeed. We have fallen somewhat short in preventing our peerless leaders from killing other people. If the truth is known, we are number one in war, and war is our number one business. We're number one in poisoning the planet with radioactive garbage. And I recently received a report from Afghanistan. We have poisoned that land with 3,000 tons of depleted uranium. These huge bombs we have manufactured, earth-penetrating and rock-penetrating, and we have left it as a legacy to that unfortunate land. We're number one in paying for war. And at last count that I came across, it's something like 20 trillion. We're number one in killing people, 1.5 million annually, resulting from our leadership of the nuclear club. 1.5 million annually, the world's people, and increasingly, as the cancer epidemic hits this country, our own people. We're number one in globalization, and that is reducible to this simply: you turn the world into a gigantic mall. So a fair conclusion is, dear sisters and brothers, that the bosses and warriors are killing us, and unfortunately, in many instances, the people of this country have been beguiled into cooperating with them. Let's take a look at the Afghan war. It's one prepared for 4 and 5 years back into 1996 or 1997. And I ask you, how can the number one terrorist nation wage any sort of realistic war against terrorism? Around September 11th, we engineered 60,000 troops on maneuvers in the Middle East and South Asia. And these maneuvers were 2 and 3 years in preparation. And a BBC report in July before September 11th predicted that hostilities would begin in Afghanistan by October, and so it happened. Israeli, German, and Russian intelligence warned Washington, D.C., that something catastrophic was imminent in this country, and nothing was done. No reaction whatsoever. And so it happened. September 11th, and the tragedy of 3,000 lives happened. So this war, dear friends, is about oil. And it's about harnessing the people of this country to an oil economy. Well, what do we do about this can of worms? Well, we love God and we love our neighbor and we strive to identify our enemies, which are not sisters and brothers abroad, but our own barbarian people, those at the top. We stop mourning, and we organize as the Wobblies used to. We organize and organize with sisters and brothers everywhere. We non-cooperate now. We don't run the system for the bosses and billionaires. We oppose any and all wars. There never has been a just war. Never, and there never will be. So we say to ourselves, the killing stops here. I will not kill, but I will prevent others from killing. The killing stops right here. And when we do that, marvelous things begin to happen. Like today, you are the answer. God bless you and thank you so much.
And that was Philip Berrigan speaking last April 20th. He died of cancer on December 6th. If you'd like to get a copy of today's program, video or audio, you can call 1-800-881-2359. That's 1-800-881-2359. Democracy Now! Is produced by Chris Abrams, Mike Burke, Angie Karen, Anna Noguera, and Alex Wolf. Mike DeFilippo is our engineer. Special thanks to Joe Friendly, Uri Galed, Angela Alston, Emily Kunstler, Simba Russo, Rafael De La Uz, Fatima Mojadidi, Jeremy Scahill, and Dennis Moynihan. Our website is democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Happy holidays.
Beneath the holy blaze and bow to our authority.